You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.
So far into the year, May 30th, 2020. This is Deanna Spingola, and I'm broadcasting from the Chicago suburbs. Thanks for joining me today at republicbroadcasting.org. I invite you to visit and subscribe to spingola.com, spingolaspeaks.net, screeningsandyhook.net. And during the program, email questions or comments to comment or comments at spingola.email. Please visit our very friendly chat room at spingola.chatango.com. My first guest today is Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, and she is the author of Fowl, Bird Flu, It's Not What You Think, Saying No to Vaccines, A Resource Guide for All Ages, Vaccines, The Risks, The Benefits, The Choices, A Resource Guide for Parents. Her websites are Courses for, the numeral 4, Courses for Mastery, .com and Vaxter.com. That's VAXXTER.com. And she said, vaccines are the backbone of the entire pharmaceutical industry. If they can make these children sick from a very early age, they become customers for life. and that is very, very true. Anyway, I had the pleasure of interviewing her, and it was just a pleasure. She's just one of the great leaders in the anti-vaccine movement. Okay, are we ready with that? Okay, go for it. Okay, go ahead.
Well, starting with your statement, vaccines are the backbone of the entire pharmaceutical industry. If they can make these children sick from a very early age, they become customers for life. And that is so true.
It's extremely true. I mean, because it's my opinion that every vaccine causes damage at some level, every single one. And it may not be overt. It may not be anything that you see outwardly. It's not like somebody gets an eczema or gets a rash or has a seizure or starts with a bronchitis or ear infections. It may not be anything overtly, but at the core level of what's happening when you inject things into children or into adults too, that you're changing their DNA, you're adding toxic chemicals. Some of the chemicals are known carcinogens, and you're injecting aluminum, which bioaccumulates in the brain. And so it may not be anything overt, but I think every single vaccine causes some level of damage. Even if it's just in children, you're just, you know, you cause a little low level brain inflammation. They get a headache. They may cry. They may be fussy. What if you just shave 10 IQ points off that kid's brain? And then the next vaccine, you shave another 10 IQ points, and then like 5 and things like that. You will never know the full maximum capability of that child if they had been unvaccinated.
And it doesn't happen immediately. It can happen years later.
Exactly.
And often does. And we look at the cancer rates in this country. And when you think back to Salk and some of the ways that they developed the vaccines that they were using on the kidneys of monkeys and formaldehyde, what is that all about? There's a taboo about mixing species, and yet people accept vaccines for their children or for themselves without even looking at the ingredients. They just automatically assume that their doctor or an authority figure knows what he's talking about, and they just go along with it without even questioning. And yet these are the same people that would never think of eating GMOs, or they're very considerate or conscientious about other things that they incorporate into their lives. And yet they allow these vaccines. What is it, 72 now?
Yeah, depending on how you count them. it could be anywhere from 72 to 76, depending on how you count them. And that's from birth to age 18, but you get somewhere around 57 by birth to age 2. And so it's a travesty, and it's a multi-generational indoctrination into a belief system that's like a religion. It's the school of medical mysticism, as my good friend Robert Scott Bell calls it. You know, the school of medical mysticism, that you believe in vaccines and you trust that they're doing the right thing, and you trust your doctor that they know that what's in the vaccines, and you trust that the FDA did all of the appropriate safety and efficacy studies, which of course all of those things I just said are completely untrue. So it's a belief system. I mean, people say, yeah, I believe in vaccines. Well, do you ever say, yeah, I believe in light bulbs? Yeah, I believe in automobiles. You know, no, because we don't have that same faith and belief system. And it's a multi-generational indoctrination that goes back 200 years. I mean, we still believe that if we stopped giving this polio vaccine, that polio would come back. I mean, how many times have I heard that? Even though the Western Hemisphere has had no wild polio viruses since 1991, the World Health Organization declared the Western Hemisphere polio-free since 1994. I mean, we're talking, 2004, you're talking almost 30 years, right? Did I do my math right? Or at least 25 years. And so I think there were under 100 cases of wild polio infection in only the most impoverished countries in the world, in the entire world in 2019. But yet, in America, we still give kids 4 injections of polio vaccines.
Oh,
why?
My gosh.
And what's in there? 2-phenoxyethanol, which is it's an acidic toxic chemical. And if you read the package inserts on any of the vaccines, or on every one of the vaccines, you'll find a section where it says that this vaccine has never been tested for carcinogenicity, meaning does it cause cancer? It's never been tested for teratogenicity, meaning does it cause birth defects? It's never been tested for mutagenicity, which means a genetic transformation that can lead to a type of cancer because of those cells that replicate. And never been tested for infertility. Does it cause infertility later in these children's lives? Never been tested, ever, any of them.
And the fertility rate has dropped tremendously. It used to be that people could get pregnant relatively easy, and that is no longer the case. You have a lot of people now going to fertility specialists to try and conceive. And yet nobody says, well, why? What's going on? What in the environment? And polio, getting back to polio, that, as you mentioned, that's an environmental kind of a thing where it has to do with the environment, the cleanliness, the hygiene, clean water, fresh air. And most of the time, most people, in this country at least, have that. They have refrigeration. They have the things that are necessary to keep from being contaminated by something that is environmental.
and polio, certainly, and FDR. He was swimming in probably the wrong pool of water, and that's how he got polio.
Well, and there's some people who are now publishing and writing that they don't even think that he had polio. They think that he had Guillain-Barré syndrome, which could have been from any number of viruses.
Oh.
And so there's some people who have written about that. And I don't know that at this late point in time, there's any way of knowing for sure. But think about the whole concept of talking about polio. And when you say, when I do community talks about polio, I usually say, when I say the word polio, what's the first thing that pops into your head? And people might say FDR, they might say iron lungs, they might say kids with braces, they might say March of Dimes, they might say, you know, limb paralysis. Now think about that for a minute, Deanna. The polio vaccine came out in 1954.
Right.
It was 60 years ago, more than 60 years ago. But yet these young parents who weren't even born then, that's what they have had a multi-generational indoctrination into believing. And when people really study polio, which is what we talk about a lot in our boot camp course, it's a, you know, we do, you know, our first, the first modules in our boot camp are about safe and effective. The second modules are about smallpox and polio, because that's the brainwashing that we have to get through. And it's also, whenever you're talking to someone who's new to this topic or has refused to look at any of the stuff that I've been putting out for 20 years, and they're new to it, that's the first place that the first knee-jerk reflex people go to. Well, what about smallpox and what about polio? So we spend 4 hours on that topic in our boot camp. It's our biggest module is smallpox and polio. And people learn in a tremendous amount that polio viruses are actually gastrointestinal viruses, and 97 to 98% of wild polio infections, when there was still a lot of wild polio viruses around, it was either an asymptomatic infection or it looked like stomach flu.
Wow.
And the virus passed through, leaving behind a lifetime of immunity and causing almost no paralysis. And even in the 3% of people who experienced some level of paralysis, more than 50% of them fully recovered within 2 years or less. So we've got those visual images of iron lung machines, which I think that from the data that I found, less than 1,200 people were on iron lung machines in the 1950s. And the iron lung machines were basically the prerequisite to today's modern ventilators. And they just use positive pressure instead of negative pressure, or negative pressure instead of positive pressure. And we hear about iron lung machines, and we think about kids with braces. Yes, there were kids with braces. Yes, there were some people that died. But the numbers were infinitesimally small. But 60 years later, everybody still talks about polio and crippled kids and kids in braces.
Wow. Well, tell us about this the boot camp. And how people can access that.
Well, we offer it. It's an 8-week intensive online boot camp. We offer it twice a year. We've had people from 18 countries join in our boot camp. So it's not just U.S. centric, because it's all done online. You enroll in the camp. You get a lesson released every Saturday that you have time to go through, and you get lots of supporting documentation. There's a portal that you go in and you watch the videos, and there's almost like a Facebook-like communication that happens inside of the portal where all the students can talk to each other and ask questions. And Matt, my business partner, and I, you know, do a lot of different things in terms of communication during that 8-week period. And then every Thursday night for 8 weeks, we have an online Zoom discussion with all of the students that we discuss the lessons that week. And there's a little mini lesson that comes along with it. The next open enrollment for our next boot camp will be in September. And if you want to get notifications about the boot camp, please go to our website, which is Vaxxter.com, V-A-X-X-T-E-R.com, and join our email list. If you're listening to this on your phone, or you have access on your phone to get into our email list directly, you can text MVI, which is like Mastering Vaccine Info, MVI, and you can text it to 555-888, and you'll get an autoresponder to add your name and your email address, and they'll put you right into our database.
Wow, that sounds fabulous.
Thank you. It is.
Yeah,
we've had several thousand people that have gone through our boot camp. We've done, I think spring 2020, I think was our sixth boot camp. We do it twice a year. It's a lot of work for me and Matt. It's a lot of work.
Oh, I can imagine.
And we'll have anywhere from 300 to 500 students enrolled. And there's lots of questions. It's a very intensive time for us to keep up with all the students. And then if you want individual courses on individual vaccines, and educational topics, you go to vaccine the letter U.com, and that's where you can find the individual courses. And you don't have to go through the boot camp to take the individual courses. And the individual courses range in price between $5.95 and about $39. And some, like our 7-part problematic ingredients course that gets bundled together, and you can get all 7 of them for $169. It saves you about $30 if you buy the bundle. And then you have lifetime access to them. And people that have gone through our Vaccine U courses have said, you know, they're 30 to 40 minute long videos with a lot of supporting PDF files in the doc box. And they said, you know, that 40 minute video took me like 3 days to go through because I had to stop it and wind it back because there was so much packed into that information. So people really like Vaccine U a lot.
Wow, that sounds fabulous. I wish more people knew about this. This is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Talking about September, the vaccine for COVID-19 is supposed to be produced by September. What do you think the response of the population here in the United States will be? And, of course, for one, I don't think that they can force anybody to accept a vaccine. But I think that they will use the economy or the idea that if you, unless you take this vaccine, we're not going to assist you economically to get back to have any assets. What is your views on that?
Well, I think it would be difficult for them to mandatorily force vaccinate everyone, even though it's a possibility. And I still think that that's still some of the people and the powers to be, that's what they want to do. They can't force you to take it at this point in time unless they change the laws, but they can make it be so uncomfortable to not take it that people will just roll over. Like if you can't get on an airplane or you can't renew your driver's license, or you can't go to a restaurant, or you can't go to like a baseball game or a football game, or you can't get your place of employment back. They can make it so difficult
for
not doing it that people will be forced into doing it. And my concern about it is that this vaccine is this RNA virus vaccine for coronavirus. They've never been able to develop a coronavirus vaccine because the vaccine is so toxic, and most of the animals in the studies either had accelerated autoimmune disease that they found when they sacrificed the animals, or the animals died. Now they didn't die directly from the vaccine, but what happened was they got the first dose of vaccine, which sensitized them. They get the second dose of vaccine, which gives a very robust antibody response. So the researchers are like, yeah, man, this is really working. This is what we want to see, is a really high antibody level. Now let's see if that really high antibody level actually protects the animals from getting sick. So when they re-exposed them to the coronaviruses that they were developing the vaccine for, that's when they developed the accelerated autoimmune response, or they died.
With the ferrets, it all died?
Yep. And the same thing in mice.
Wow.
And so now they're doing this. They're accelerating this under the PrEP Act, under Project BioShield, where they get all the funding they need, and which came from a 2003 piece of legislation called Project BioShield. And then in 2005, they passed what's called the PrEP Act, P-R-E-P, the PrEP Act. And that's the Public Readiness and Emergency Preparedness Act. And they, and anything that they bring to market while that piece of legislation is enacted, which Alex Azar, our head of HHS, activated that piece of legislation on February the 4th, and it was recorded into the Federal Register on March the 17th, and we will continue to operate under the PrEP Act until which time The head of HHS decides that we are no longer in a pandemic or an emergency situation. And anything that is developed whether during that time, whether it's a drug, an IV solution, a biologic, a vaccine, a piece of software, a technology, anything that is developed during this time ostensibly to treat COVID-19 or to eliminate the virus SARS-CoV-2, all of those things will have 100% complete liability protection. You cannot sue them. They have no responsibility whatsoever. Even if it kills you, the only recourse that you have is to try to convince the U.S. Attorney General that these products were made under an act of willful misconduct, which means they intentionally created a product to kill you.
Wow.
Which, and so if you can't convince the U.S. Attorney General of that, then you just are, you're just dead or injured for life, and there's no recourse to the drug companies at all.
And that takes you back to the 1986 Act under Reagan, which they put through. But in that act, they were supposed to go back and prove the efficacy of their vaccines to the Department of Health and Human Services, which they never did. Correct?
Yeah, well, the 1986 Act was designed for the childhood vaccination schedule. I mean, put it in context of when that bill was passed. In 1986, there were only three childhood vaccines that were given. The MMR, which is measles, mumps, rubella, DPT, which is diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis, and polio. There were only three vaccines that they created this act for the childhood schedule to give them liability protection. That's why all the subsequent vaccines that they've made, that's why they all end up on the pediatric schedule, because that gives the drug companies liability protection for their faulty products that have been declared unavoidably unsafe. But here's the thing, is that the PrEP Act that came out in 2005, so we're talking, you know, almost 20 years later, actually longer than that, almost 30 years later, right? 2006, 96, 2006. Yeah, 20 years later, almost 20 years later, kind of takes the 1986 Act and puts it on steroids.
Right.
Because now it covers every vaccine that's created, not only for children, but also for adults. And they're coming after the adults next. That came out of in 2015 when they released the adult vaccination plan to increase demand for vaccines and pipeline and structure and delivery systems for vaccinating all adults. That was introduced through the CDC in February of 2015.
Now, how does the Affordable Health Care Act play into all of this? I think it's all incremental. It's all building up to the point that the government wants to own your body and make decisions for all your medical, all your medical decisions.
Yeah, they not only want to own your body, what they're really wanting to do is they really want to, it's all about the transhumanism movement. And it's about, you know, artificial intelligence and hooking our brains up to the cloud so that our brains can immediately see like what Google sees. But here's the thing about the transhumanism movement and AI, artificial intelligence, is if your brain can go up and look at the cloud, well, they can send anything. It's a two-way street. They can send anything down into your brain that they want. So the transhumanism movement is really where they're headed with this, with the microchipping. It's my understanding that there's 19 patented products out there already for microchipping people. They can put nanotechnology in these vaccines under the PrEP Act. That nanotechnology can respond to 5G. They can do anything they want, Deanna, under this PrEP Act, which is really frightening. Considering where we are right now with these shutdowns and these faulty fake mask things and this nonsensical social distancing stuff and, you know, all of these different things that they're doing is just, it's pretty scary to think what they might do in response, you know?
Exactly.
In fact, there's two memes that somebody sent me this week that I thought really apply to this. One of the memes, which says this: this virus is extremely dangerous. In just a few months, it spread all over the world and killed 80% of our freedoms.
Right. Absolutely. Oh, my gosh.
And then the other one that somebody sent me, it said, facts about COVID-19. This virus can travel 6 feet. It cannot travel 6'1" or greater. It can live on all surfaces except anything that comes in the mail from Amazon. It does not live in Target, Walmart, Home Depot, Lowe's, or any grocery store. It's only deadly in bars, restaurants, small businesses, hair salons, nail salons, and especially deadly in churches. And it cannot live on the food that you get as long as you get it in a takeout to go. That, so to me, sums up all of it.
Yes,
it absolutely
it
tells you exactly what we, how we have been manipulated. We rolled over and bought the Kool-Aid, and people are not willing to give it up. Now that they are bought into this space, I mean, I could see a lot of the things that they did early on, like say in the first couple of weeks, because we really didn't know how deadly this virus was going to be. We really didn't know if this was some sort of biochemical attack. I mean, that's one of the early things that I said. It's like, are you sure this is a virus and they're not releasing some sort of, you know, ricin or some sort of other mustard gas, some sort of chemical warfare that these people are so sick and dropping over dead and they can't breathe? Are we really sure this is a virus? Is it not some sort of a chemical warfare attack, some sort of biochemical attack? So that's one of the things I said early on. And so I thought, well, it was appropriate to get people to go in their homes, shut things down for a couple of weeks till we get our arms around this and see what it is. And now that we know, and we've known for 6 weeks now what it is, kind of a big fat nothing burger virus that is in the family of viruses that have been around for 60 years, there's four viruses that we know have been making people sick every single year. It's 40% of influenza type illness. We know that, yes, like any virus, any bacteria, a few people that contract it, if they've got underlying comorbidities like heart problems, diabetes, emphysema, asthma, really bad asthma, uncontrolled asthma, any sort of like bronchial things, or they're older and they're on polypharmacy, which means lots of different medications, and they're frail and kind of sick. Any pathogen, Deanna, any pathogen, a few people can die from. But to shut down the entire world, to put 26 people into unemployment, to make businesses go bankrupt so that when people want to go back to work, the business isn't even there anymore to go back to work to, just to decimate the restaurant business, decimate it, and to make them have all these tables like 6 feet apart. I mean, I have friends that own restaurants. I have one friend that owns three relatively large restaurants here in Cleveland. And he has told me that if they can't operate at 70% capacity night after night, they can't make it. 70% capacity, you know, and what they've done is, if he said, like, for example, if your restaurant has 28 tables and now they've taken you down to 14, even if you're running at 100% capacity, that's not anywhere close to even breaking even. And I said to him, I go, well, just here in Cleveland, Ohio, where I am, I said, how many restaurants do you think are going to go out of business? He said, I think that by the end of the year, which is like 6 months from now, 40% of all restaurants will be gone.
Oh my gosh. And really the profit margin in the grocery business, and I assume in the restaurant business, is not that great.
No, it's really not. I mean, the margins are really, really thin. And if you take out 40% of the restaurants, and this was something that I didn't know until he told me, that in terms of employers, the restaurant business as employers across the country have the largest number of employees by heads and shoulders above the number two level. Of like millions and millions and millions of people work in the restaurant business. It's one of the, it collectively as an industry, it's the largest employer in America. And if 40% of those restaurants are going to go away, that means people will never go back to work.
Well, that reminds me too about all of the big stores that have gone out of business or have limited their business, Sears, Penny's, all these big stores that used to employ so many people, and the people that they employed
were just regular folks who had a, who didn't, you know, have a particular, well, they were just regular people that worked for these stores. And Amazon and our need for immediate gratification of finding the stuff that we want on our front porch really accelerated the demise of all these other stores and the employment of millions of people.
Yep. These are people that are mostly like maybe high school graduates. They don't
right.
have college degrees. They don't have professional degrees. Like they're not a dentist or a podiatrist or a
right.
veterinarian or something, but they have families and they have mortgages and they have kids in school and they have kids in college and they need that employment. I mean, this whole idea that some bunch of bureaucrats are not even elected people came along and decided what was a necessary business and what was an unnecessary business? Excuse me, if you have an unnecessary business, you're not in business.
Right.
that means you have no customers, you don't sell any products. I mean, you close your door because you have nobody that's paying you money to provide something. If someone is paying you money to provide a service or a product, you are a necessary business to your customers. And for them to suddenly come along and say, oh, nail salons and hairdressers and dog groomers and yard people and all of these other people are unnecessary businesses. How dare they? How dare they? And how dare people like let that be okay with them? How dare they people say social distancing? I am not going to let that into my lexicon. I'm not going to let that into my mouth. I am not going to let into my subconscious. This is the quote, new normal. I'm not allowing that to happen in my brain. And I hope that people that are listening to this and listening to your show will do the same thing. No, this is not the new normal. It's not happening. It's not happening.
Right. Just the fact that that people are wearing masks is very, very unhealthy. Just extremely unhealthy.
Exactly.
And it's, you're not getting enough oxygen. I've seen people out running who are wearing these masks, and I'm thinking, they're going to fall over. And what are they thinking?
Yeah, I got a picture from a friend of mine that of a car that had crashed.
Right.
And this person was wearing a mask in their car, and their oxygen level had dropped so low, and their CO2 level went up so high, it made them sleepy that they ran off the road and crashed their cars.
Right. I saw it was a red car, wasn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, I saw that also, and this is really unhealthy. Well, what about the nursing homes and the other places that are preventing the families of people to see people in nursing homes? That how tragic, how cruel. To withhold visitation from a resident in a nursing home.
Well, and one of the things they're doing here in Ohio is if you have an ill child and needs to be hospitalized for whatever reason, they're only allowing one parent at a time to go visit the child.
Oh my gosh.
And so there's a big hullabaloo about that. They're actually going to, I think it's Children's Hospital down by Akron. I could be wrong about the location, but there's huge blowback about that. I just learned from a patient of mine in the office this week that she's pregnant and she wants to go and get an ultrasound.
Oh,
and,
yeah,
and,
that.
Well, she's going to, there's reasons she
oh,
needs
okay.
to do that. And but she's only going to have one, just one ultrasound, but she needs to do that. And her husband is not allowed to go back into the ultrasound suite.
Oh my gosh. And why is that?
because it's just not safe. It's not safe, you know, to have that close of contact with the three people in the room at the same time. I mean, this is just
literally pregnant.
it's so out of control. And you know, it's just out of control. And people have just like gone lockstep with it, not questioned it. It's like, well, it's just a policy.
Oh my gosh.
I know. Drives me crazy.
And there have been people, runners who've been running in a race. I believe this was in Japan. That they fell over dead because they were wearing a mask.
Yep. I know.
And of course, you don't hear any of this on the news. I haven't had my TV on since March 28th, so I try to avoid all this nonsense. I keep up online with what is going on, and I just can't imagine how what they're saying on TV. And when you look at television advertising, I think probably 95% of the TV ads that are run on TV are for pharmaceuticals. And so people think, oh, we need to go and ask our doctor for this product or that product. And I think we're the only country in the world now, it used to be New Zealand and this country, that allowed direct marketing to the consumer.
Well, the U.S. and New Zealand, yep, that's it. We're the only two countries that allow that. But what's really bothered me a lot is how conditioned we've come so fast. I mean, this all stuff started to fall apart around the first part of March. So we've got March, April, May, in 3 months, how everybody's just dancing to the drummer, you know, and not questioning, not challenging. I think that people are starting to wake up though, and they're starting to have some blowback, which encourages me. But, I mean, I had to wear a mask yesterday when I went into the post office because they wouldn't let me in there. So I put on a mask, and you know what I put on the front of it? I wrote right across the front of the mask, placebo. And I walked right, and they were standing there, and they just sort of looked at me, and I had to send a certified letter, and so I did my little thing, and to me that is a form of nonviolent, blowback, you know, nonviolent,
right.
Civil disobedience. That's the word I was looking for.
Right.
It's a form of nonviolent civil disobedience, masks with messages that tell people. I saw one, in fact, we are actually starting an Instagram account with that people could do these things. When we put up there yesterday, somebody said, had on the front of their mask, "This mask is as stupid as the governor." And so, I mean, just things that you're compliant, you're doing your thing to keep your job, but you're giving a message to everyone of where you actually stand with this. And to me, that's a form of nonviolent civil disobedience, of kind of like taking inch by inch, taking our power back by letting other, like planting a seed in somebody else's brain. It's like, yeah, you're right. I just was reading an article earlier this morning. That starts out, I mean, the article is called, where is it? What's the name of it here? Hold on. It's, why was I trying to do that? It's, this whole article on masks. Oh, it says masks don't work. A review of science relevant to COVID-19 social policy. This was written in April of 2020. The person who authored it is from the Ontario Civil Liberties Association. The first sentence says, masks and respirators do not work. There have been extensive randomized control studies and meta-analysis of these studies, which all show that masks and respirators do not work to prevent respiratory influenza illnesses or respiratory illnesses believed to be transmitted by droplets and aerosolized particles. Furthermore, the relevant known physics and biology, which I review, are such that masks and respirators do not work and should be a paradox if masks and respirators are given to, are worn by healthy people. It will make them sick. Such recklessness is also certainly the case of our current global lockdown of over 1 billion people, an unprecedented experiment in medical and political history. I mean, this is just, seriously, this guy who wrote this article, he's a retired physicist. So he looked at all the physics sorts of things. That particular article, the name of the article, if anybody wants to look it up, is Masks Don't Work, A Review of Science Relevant to COVID-19 Social Policy. And the author's name is D as in David, G as in George, Rancourt, spelled R-A-N-C-O-U-R-T. R as in Robert, A, N as in Nancy, Court, C-O-U-R-T. So D.G. Rancourt, who's part of the Ontario Civil Liberties Association.
Okay. Well, they don't work. And I think, too, I wore a mask in the post office. I had to return something. And while I was standing in line 6 feet away from the person in front of me, I just lifted the mask because I really do have trouble breathing through the mask. I just feel like I'm being suffocated. And so I just lift the mask up, and the postal worker had a mask. And what else did she have? It was just so crazy. It was just so, and I'm thinking, you're running around doing packages, lifting boxes. What are you thinking wearing a mask? And assumedly she chose to wear it for the whole day. Because when I went in the post office previously, the lady didn't have a mask on. They just had this big plastic sheet over everything. Oh. And the other place I wore a mask was to the UPS office. And when I took this box in to return it, they had me, you had to stay outside, and then you could go in after the previous customer came out. You go in, and they have this table in the middle of the room. They're 6 feet, or probably, they were probably 10 feet away from the table. You put your stuff on the table, and then it was like you had leprosy or something.
I know.
It was so ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
That's why I'm saying, okay, if there's something that you have to do, well then go in with a mask with a message.
Yes.
Let people know how ridiculous this is. Mask, you can write across of it, just take a black marker. Masks don't work. Masks don't keep you from getting sick. I'm not afraid of you. Why are you afraid of me? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of things. Just be creative. And then once you create one of those, take a picture of it and go out to Instagram and find our Instagram account, you know, Mask with Messages, and upload it.
Right.
And we're just going to have a whole collection there, Mask with Messages. And that's the other thing. Follow me on Instagram. It's Dr. Tenpenny, Dr. Tenpenny. And follow me on Twitter, which is Busy Dr. T. And we're making noise. We're getting a lot of things out. I've done, by the end of this month, in the last 2 months, I'll have done almost 100 interviews, Deanna.
Oh my gosh.
And some of them are 2 and 3 and 4 hours long. And to just to put that in context, I usually don't do 20 interviews in a year. So, you know, to do 160 days, we're getting the message out. We're letting people know, but people need to like get the SARS virus out of your brain. Get it out of your brain. Detox your brain cells.
Yes, that's what you need.
And I saw a while back. It said, turn off your television. It's spreading coronaviruses.
Yes. And that's why I turned mine off. I just thought, I don't need this. I don't need any programming. It's a waste of time. It's a waste of energy. Well, I'm taking an energy medicine class. I'm in my second year. And there are other ways of taking care of one's body without all the vaccines and the prescription drugs and all the rest. And even talking about prescription drugs, we just accept all these antibiotics, which kind of destroy your immune system or alter your bio, what is it, your immune system. Your
microbiome, yep.
Yes, and it's not good for you. When you're anti is against life. Antibiotic is against life. So you really need to consider what you put into your body. And as far as we were talking about the ventilators, we were talking about ventilators,
mm-hmm.
And what they are using with people who they say have this COVID-19, that really makes you choke. It makes you, so you can't breathe. It's not like a chest tube. It's actually something that they use when you're in surgery to keep you breathing or to regulate something. But when you put something like that, a tube down somebody's throat, they're going to gag. They're going to cough. It's really terrible. I think that probably has killed people.
Well, it has, and part of it is, and I'm going to, over the weekend, I'm finishing up the next article. It's part 4 of the article series that I'm writing for Vaxxter, my website, which is V-A-X-X-T-E-R. The first one is same virus, different, same playbook, different virus. Part two is about the PREP Act, like never let a good emergency go to waste.
Right, Rahm Emanuel.
Yep. And the third one that I just released on Monday was about the nonsense of this testing. I mean, at the end of the day, you don't know, are you supposed to be positive? If you're positive, does that mean you're immune? If you're negative, does that mean you're susceptible? Do you, and now that the CDC has come out with, they've mixed all of the data together, the PCR testing on the nose, the PCR testing on the throat, the PCR testing on the stool, the blood antibody testing for IgG antibodies, they mixed all of it together. We will never know, and yet they are making public policy based on, you hear it every day on the news, oh, so-and-so tested positive. Oh, 12 more people tested positive. What the heck does that mean?
Right.
To test positive. And so when I would hear this all the time, and you hear this gal who does, she does the news on the radio show that I listen to in the morning. She drives me crazy because she's just so hysterical about all these people testing positive. What does that mean? If you get a PCR testing and it tests positive, it means that you've got a little bit of the SARS-CoV-2 virus genetics in your throat or in your body. You've got a little tiny bit of that genetic material. But if you're asymptomatic, it means all that's there is a trace of the genes, not the full virus, which means you are not a carrier and you're not spreading viral germs everywhere.
Well, antibodies, even if you had a cold 2 weeks ago or whatever, you're going to have antibodies, so you're going to test positive. So the antibodies simply means what? That you've been exposed or haven't been exposed? How was it before you had the cold? You have to look at the time frame. We probably all have antibodies against, if you have a cold or the flu minor thing.
Well, the PCR testing is there something present there now?
Right.
And the PCR testing, if like a lot of people are saying, okay, I'm pretty sure I had that virus. I was really sick. I had all those symptoms. I want to get tested to see if I'm immune. Well, if you get tested by PCR testing more than 30 days after you were sick, the test is going to be negative because it just is. That's just the range of the test. The chance of that being positive after 30 days, the PCR testing, which is what they are making public policy on, is PCR testing, RT-PCR testing. And I document all of this in the article that I just wrote. So if you want to really read it and drill down on it, if you go to Vaxter.com and you look at it says coronavirus part 3 testing, what are we doing? And you drill down on it. If the PCR, if you are more than 30 days past the window of when you were ill, the chance of a PCR test being positive is somewhere between 1 and 2%, depending if it's a nose or a throat swab.
Oh, my gosh.
And they're making public policy on this. Public policy on this. And so, and then if you get a blood test and the antibody is positive, They say, well, we don't know if that protects you from coronavirus or this SARS-CoV-2 or not. That's exactly right, because the antibodies are not sensitive enough and specific enough to be designed for a particular virus. You could have had a coronavirus infection 5 years ago, and you'll have an antibody to it.
Right. Exactly. And what about all these New York deaths? The hospitals are collecting money for COVID-19 deaths when the person could have died in a car crash.
I know.
A lot of cheating going on.
Yeah, but if you write down the fact, if you write down on a death certificate, COVID-19, they get an extra $13,000 for that. And if the person happened to be on a ventilator, you get an extra $39,000.
Holy cow.
Yeah. Yep. So it's a really, really, really bad deal. It's really bad.
Oh my gosh. Well, I for one, and probably represent thousands upon thousands of people, are so grateful for your work and for what you're doing. I think you're the leader of the pack as far as speaking out and talking about this. And all the radio programs that you're doing, the interviews that you're doing, you need to take care of yourself and
kick back and relax for an hour or two.
Well, actually, I used to be, when I was in college and, well, high school and college, I was a classically trained concert pianist. In fact, when I was in college, I played in a lot of national competitions. And then I haven't played in 40 years. I mean, I just never had time for it. And in March of this year, I just decided I wanted to get back into playing my piano. So I bought a piano and I'm just loving it. So my time every day for me is I take my phone and I set my timer for about 45 minutes. Cause if I don't set the timer, I'll be in there for like days. And I go and I sit down and I pick up some of my Brahms and Chopin and Rachmaninoff pieces that I haven't played in a really, really long time. And I'm working them back up into my fingers and my brain. And it's not like riding a bike. It's not like you could just sit down and do it. But I really enjoy that. That's my time away, that I'm just focused on the music and I'm just really, really enjoying it. So I do that every day. That is one little thing that I do for myself every day.
My daughter was a classical pianist, and she was she loved Rachmaninoff. She just concentrated on the classics. She passed away on August 8th of last year from cancer.
Oh wow!
Metastatic breast cancer, which, as I read some of the things that I read about things hitting you later on in life, I think about her. And I'm sorry, don't mean to be emotional, but you struck a chord.
Oh,
literally. No, it's okay. I'm glad you're doing that. I'm really glad you're doing that.
Well, I figured it was good for my hands, it's good for my brain, and it's really good for my soul.
Exactly. I think music soothes the soul more than just about anything. And my daughter used to play. Oh, she was magnificent. She had a baby grand. And her husband is learning to play the piano, which I think is so great, because he practices and he's learning. So anyway, I'm glad you brought that up. I think that's a beautiful way for you to unwind and to put your mind somewhere else and get it off of all of these negative things. So that's good.
Yeah, thank you. Well, I'm so sorry for your loss. I'm so sorry.
Well, I think that probably every family in America has experienced some loss, whether small or great, because of allopathic medicine, because of Western medicine, because of prescription drugs, because of vaccines. I think that every family is touched. I don't think any family is untouched, whether they recognize it or not.
I think that's true. Well, it's like I said earlier, you know, I think every single vaccine causes damage at some level.
Exactly.
If it's either subtle or it could possibly show up later, right?
Right.
And so, so it's the whole reason that I've been doing this for 20 years and nearly 40,000 hours of my time, is that I've been trying to be the educational arm for people to learn and study just a little bit. You don't need to know this to the level that I know it. You don't need to do it on this platform, but you need to know enough to just stop and ask what's coming through that needle. And what is pertussis? What is it? Why should I be so afraid of pertussis? And why do I need to be afraid of measles? Explain that to me again. I mean, do a little bit of homework, and I think most people would come to the conclusion that the most important thing they can do is to just say no.
Right. And really, of the 72 vaccines or the 78, which one of the diseases that you're being vaccinated for do you really fear? I can't think of anything that I'm terribly afraid of. Nobody wants cancer. Nobody wants ADHD. But you have to look at the numbers and think, how come we have such a such an epidemic of these things with children. It used to be cancer was a disease of old people, and now you have infants. And it breaks my heart to see these little children who are being given chemotherapy and all the other horrible things that go along with cancer. For an infant, for a child, a toddler, to go through that is just heartbreaking.
I know.
So, thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart. And I know that I speak for many, many thousands of people. Thank you for what you're doing and for leading the pack and for speaking up when the rest of us are unable to. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. And, you're welcome. Thank you so much.
And keep playing Rachmaninoff.
I will. My favorite is actually Brahms and Chopin, but I will be keep on playing. That'll be nice.
Yes.
So thank you for this opportunity, and until we talk again, it's been really nice.
Thank you. Bless you.
All right.
Have a beautiful day.
Thank you. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. All righty. We are going to have our next guest momentarily. I hope that you enjoyed listening to Dr. Tenpenny. She's a fabulous person and has a lot of wonderful information to share with us, and we need to make certain that we share what we have learned and what we know with others. I know there's a lot of people who are just so, they absolutely believe, as she said in the beginning of this interview, that people believe in vaccines as if it were some sort of a religion, which I think that you could possibly call it that, refer to it as a religion. So I do hope that we can all get educated and realize what is going on in this country. And as I mentioned, there's not a family that does not have somebody in the family that has suffered as a result of vaccines. I remember as a child, I had eczema, I had ear infections, I had all kinds of things. And of course, I had all the vaccines. I'm sure that many of our listeners have had all those vaccines. And probably all of our listeners also have people in their families that are suffering from vaccine injuries. And so remember that vaccines are harmful. They cause brain damage. And whether it's losing IQ points or whatever, it's pretty dangerous. So anyway, we will be right back with our second guest. So stay tuned. Be right back.